Let childhood have good conditions in which to be born into your world, and they will have good conditions in which to be born into the spirit world. 688. Then Thomas Paine stood forth, but was unable to vocalize, and Wesley spake in the cabinet as Paine dictated to him in continuation of the theme Denton had under consideration as follows, to wit, when the world develops to a higher plane and utilizes its energies for the development of man, and not for money, then they will bring forth generations of children, women and men, who will dwell on earth unselfishly and in peace, and the children of earth will reach the spirit world prepared to enjoy its magnificence. But mortal man is material, and while dwelling in that condition, must be subject to the vicissitudes of that life, but these vicissitudes may be greatly modified, compared to the present, in the direction of a more glorious unfoldment. 689. Friends, there is one God, the God of nature, or, rather, the God nature. This God permeates everything, even the grass. R.V. 2489. This is the God that has absolute dominion over all that exists. You are all children of this one God under whose dominion you are here. And you are here, because you could not help yourselves. You had no say as to that part of your destiny, and you will leave the earth life, under the same dominion, nature, and you cannot change the destiny nature has marked out for you. Nature's mode of reform is development. 690. You, of this country, are proud of your morals. As I have said before, go with me to India and learn a lesson of what you consider morals. Go with me to India, take your money, your valuables along with you. But keep your eye on them as you pass through your own and other moral nations, till you reach pagan India. Then, you can leave your money, your valuables to themselves wherever you please, and go on your journey, and whenever you wish to return, do so, and safely. In the place where you left your valuables there will you find them. You cannot do that, in any part of your boasted moral country. 691. How shall you produce, in your country, an equivalent of the morals of India? Bring around your people conditions that will produce better men and better women, then the better the men and women, the better the children, and vice versa. But, as has been said, your present conditions send people to the spirit world who are in such low conditions they prefer to remain there. They do not care for higher conditions, and so stubborn are they, that it is useless for us to spend our energies in endeavor to reform them. 692. And Denton again comes forth, saying, yes, we conclude to leave them alone in their darkness, knowing that after a while some latent energy will wake up, arousing them to a sense of their low conditions, when they will gladly welcome assistance to awake, and then they may advance. On your earth some remain long before they show any willingness to advance, but that depends much on the nature of the person. Take one whose nature is to be good, place that one in bad conditions and he will go down, but such can be reformed, more or less easily. 693. But if you had no criminals, what would become of your lawyers? I suppose they think they are needed to protect criminals in their meanness, at least that seems to be much of their business, and if you see crime increasing in your land you can trace some of the increase to practices of criminal lawyers. And with some tests given by the guides to Mr. and Mrs. Whitesides, and a fierce blast through the trumpet by Daniel Abion, the seance concluded. Seance number 42, November 16, 1902. 694. Present, as the circle, C. V. N. House and wife, Dr. Sahas, Joseph Simpson, Charles Reader, Lawrence Reader, Maggie Newman, Mr. Claude Whitesides and wife, of Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Mrs. M. I. Dye, of Chicago, sojourning for the time being near Paola, Kansas. A. Minutes of previous seance read and approved, and Reed and Denton, respectively, greeted the circle with congratulations concerning the fact of doing this work here under adverse conditions, and at last, in spite of all, about to succeed. Then came to visibility of the circle the Spirit 695. Dr. J. B. Lamb, saying that he would endeavor to act as amanuensis in relating the experience of another, and choosing a tablet therefore, took his position between the circle and cabinet, but facing the circle, and so holding the tablet open in his left hand that the circle could all see the paper upon which the writing was being done. To be clear of writing ahead of the pencil, and dimly discern the lines of writing left behind the pencil as the right hand of the spirit moved across the paper. This spirit wrote two pages, tore the two leaves from the tablet, handed them to the secretary and returned to his position before the circle, wrote upon seven leaves more of the tablet, but did not, as the other spirits have generally done, tear the writing from the tablet, but when done, handed the tablet to the secretary, saying to him, "Please tear that writing from the tablet and return the tablet to me," which the secretary did, as the circle witnessed, and the spirit took the tablet, placed it in the writing desk and vanished. 696. And the writing sets out the experience of Santo, the sea pirate, as follows, to wit, "We meet many strange and interesting spirits in our daily work, and when we meet one who claims more than a passing interest, we endeavor to get the history of his work for our book." One spirit related to us the following experience. 697. "I journeyed to the spirit land about 200 years ago. I made the journey, not willingly, but by force, I was killed by a comrade. I had killed many myself, and in some ways, it seemed retribution that I should be killed. I did not realize it then, but I know now that I was a very bad man, yet I was once an innocent child. I used to lie hours watching the ships, and in my fancy, I would call them water birds, and would eagerly watch them, as with outstretched wings, sails, they swam so swiftly and straight. I would draw pictures in my mind of the strange, beautiful lands they visited, of the treasures they must be loaded with, returning like good loyal subjects with treasures for their ruler. My dreams were always of foreign lands. When the skies at evening were lit with the gorgeous lights of sunset, I saw not the clouds, but in their places were vessels withdrawing from a sea battle." 698. "By and by the ships seemed to beckon me to go with them to distant lands. Long they beckoned, and at last, I followed. Year after year they led me, and at last, I awoke to find that the boy, who might have been an artist or poet, was a man and a successful sea pirate." 699. "Crime is not committed simply to commit crime, but for something beyond the crime. The goal is looked at so steadily that the road traveled is not noticed. Ends, noble in themselves, are lost in the unworthiness of their attainment. I had desired riches for those I loved, that they might be removed from toil, and in striving to reach this end, I overlooked the means. We would lie in wait for the huge Spanish galleon, a large ship, with three or four decks, formerly used by the Spaniards to transport to Spain the gold and silver bullion from the mines of Mexico and Peru, and board and rob her of the wealth she was carrying home so jubilantly." 700. "I was killed by a comrade, over a division of spoils, and when I next awoke, I thought I was shut in the hold of a ship. I thought it might be the one we had just looted. I could feel the rushing and the lap, lap, of the waves against her sides. I expected a summons to death, not knowing that I was already dead, but none came. Surely they will bring me water and food," were my next thoughts, as the hours passed on. I could not tell day from night, all seemed dark and dismal to me. How long I was in this condition I cannot tell. I thought of my past life, and at last my thoughts wandered back to my happy peaceful youth. 701. "But not until I had begun to regret the course I had taken because it was wrong, and not because I regretted failing in my undertaking, did a ray of light enter my dark prison. This tiny ray seemed to beckon me as the ships did in my youth, but though I searched with a brave and longing heart, it was years before I discovered its source. That tiny light has led me on, and has encouraged me to do all I could to right the many wrongs I was guilty of. I have not found the peace of mind that I enjoyed as a child, but in useful, conscientious work for others, I'm beginning to lose the horrors of my first awakening to the realization of the wrongs I was guilty of." 702. "I am glad to see that so many are beginning to learn that their friends, who have passed over before them, are often very near them, encouraging them to do what is right. I think as the people of the world develop their spirituality, the world will lose much of its misery. There are many things I did upon earth that will always linger in my memory, and will no doubt be the means of causing me to help poor, misguided men, as I once was, to live better lives. 703. If you live right, the day of death will be a great day, for it will be a day of liberty. But if you do not live right, the day of death shall find you in bondage, bound by fetters of your own making. The manacles of earth are not near as binding as these will be. If you see the light of spiritual guidance, follow where it beckons, and do the things you find to do, upon the way. Many tasks will be disagreeable and not to your liking, but they will be the very tasks you will need to perform. With these final words Santo left us and we began to moralize over what he had told us. We will not burden you with our deductions, but will leave you to think of his life story. Signed, J. B. Lam 704. The spirit Professor Denton stood forth again, asking for a subject to which he might speak, and Dr. Sahus responded with "What is man's place in nature?" And Denton asked him, "Doctor, do you know?" Sahus, "Highest in intellect." Spirit, "Highest place in intellect and spirituality, but for beauty, he is not, by any means. So man is not the whole of nature, but part of nature, and as he leads in spirituality, his place in the higher life is the highest ultimate of nature. Of this, however, we have told you heretofore. 705. A spirit, Josiah Collins, gave his name, and speaking in fairly good oral tones, said, "It is grand that we can come from the spirit world to your world and show you that we are yet alive. Some of you people will soon be ready to come to this side, for the old must soon change your exchange worlds, and the young people will soon get to be old." 706. I met one poor fellow not long here. I was watching him. He seemed entirely lost, alone, wandering in darkness. I asked, "Are you hunting for a Methodist or some religionist?" He said, "I am hunting for an honest man." I said, "Well, sir, you have struck one right now, and I can tell you some things, but you had better learn them yourself, and fill yourself up with facts. Work for facts, and you will find that it is honest facts you need, more than you need to find an honest man outside of yourself. When selfishness predominates, darkness prevails, and you have light as your selfishness is cleared away. A man is part of nature, and nature was exceedingly wise when she established the continuity of life, and quite wise when she set up the proclamation thereof. In this way, you can write me down as Josiah Collins. Good night." Seance 40 to November 17, 1902 706½. This was a special seance and for the benefit of Mr. and Mrs. Whitesides, but the spirits desired that the principal phenomena be taken note of for the book. Therefore, we attempt a description of some of the occurrences, as follows. First, there were placed in the cabinet, on a box that served for a table, two small handbells, tambourine, and some other small articles. Second, the medium was seated in the parting of the curtains, with his face toward the center of the circle. A bit of tape was placed around each arm of the medium, at the wrist, and tied and sewed closely around the wrists. The ends of the tape, some 4 inches in length, sewed fast to medium's pants at the knees, and then the cabinet curtains pinned together, closely, under the chin of the medium, and pinned together at several points between chin and feet, leaving face and head of medium in full view of the circle, and a common coach candle burning on the table of the secretary, but slightly shaded from medium's face, though leaving the medium's face in full and clear view of the circle during the entire seance. But inside the cabinet all is dark except what little light would get into the cabinet at the small parting of the curtains immediately over the medium's head. Third, all being in readiness and no one, in the physical, inside the cabinet, immediately, there is violent ringing of the two small bells and one of the bells thrown through the opening over medium's head, and onto the carpet, between the circle and the medium, then the other bell, in like manner, and the bells, by Mrs. Abba, held near to medium's head, and a hand reached out, over medium's head, took hold of the bells, and immediately took them into the cabinet, and the bells again thrown out, onto carpet, as before. And this process with the bells, was often repeated, and the tambourine was so treated, much in the same way as the bells, and bells and tambourine, all in violent motion, making great commotion and noise inside the cabinet. In the meanwhile, the medium is not detected in moving in any way, and certain it is that he could not have moved about either of his hands without instant detection by the circle. Fourth, the great handkerchief test, to wit, the members of the circle, each called on to hand his or her handkerchief to Mrs. Abba, who dampened each one with water, handed back to each his or her handkerchief, thus dampened. Then Mrs. Abba, beginning at right of circle, took the dampened handkerchief of the person at the right extreme of the circle, placed the said handkerchief upon medium's head. Instantly a hand was seen to take the handkerchief from medium's head into cabinet, and in about 1 minute thereafter, the handkerchief would be thrust out, through curtain parting, over medium's head and onto the carpet, near to feet of circle, and owner of the kerchief, at right of circle, would take the handkerchief, thus thrown upon the floor, identify the same as his own, and the one that was dampened as aforesaid, and find a writing thereon, made with indelible pencil during the time said kerchief was in the cabinet. Then the kerchief of the person next to one at the right of circle was taken and treated in like manner as the first was, and when returned, a like writing found to have been placed upon the kerchief, while the same was inside cabinet, and so on, one by one, each person's handkerchief was, in like manner, taken into and thrust out of cabinet, and each one identified his or her own handkerchief, and each found that there had been made, upon his or her own handkerchief, when the same was in the cabinet, either a handwriting or picture. Example, upon the handkerchief of Mrs. Whitesides, was a profile, which she and her husband instantly recognized as a perfect picture of the face and head of their little daughter, late deceased. And on comparing the picture on the kerchief with a photo of said child which Mr. Whitesides had concealed on the inside of his watch case, the whole circle at once recognized the complete resemblance of the two pictures to each other, so as to be thoroughly satisfied that the two pictures must be of the same person. And Mrs. Lamb and Mrs. Dye had pictures on their handkerchiefs. 707. Fifth. The medium was examined and found to be sewed as at first, and in such manner as it would have been impossible for him to have used his hands to produce the said phenomena, and leave the sewing intact. Seance number 43, November 20, 1902. Present, as visitors, Mr. A. T. Hinshaw, of Albo, Casco, Nebraska, Mr. John Sams, of Emporia, Kansas, Judge W. I. Smith, of Sparta, Tennessee, and Mrs. M. I. Dye, making 17 persons altogether in the circle. And the seance room being small, and the three new elements, and especially friend Smith being entirely new, the greater portion of the efforts of the band at this time seemed to be to try to give some phenomena that might tend to give to him some confidence of the possibility of the genuineness of the phenomena here. Caroline experiences among children prematurely born into spirit life. 708. However, one lady claiming to be a messenger from higher spiritual conditions, came forth, arrayed in the brilliantly white attire of such spirits, and gave a message in whisper, saying, "I am known as Caroline. I am a messenger, belonging, however, to what you perhaps would consider higher spheres. And I am here, bringing a message descriptive of our work, for the purpose of enabling you to comprehend and appreciate the pure, beautiful, innocent and happy conditions of our glorious realms." 709. The department in which I am now engaged is in that realm where is the spirit home of the many myriads of little children, prematurely taken out of the earth life and transferred to the motherly guardianship of pure messengers, as gentle and innocent as themselves, and in my especial division, are many, many hundreds of these blessed little innocents, and it is my delightful and happy privilege to aid in educating them and in supplying them with the experiences of earth life, of which they were deprived by early transition and which are necessary, in order to a full rounded out spirituality. A. These little children are as diversified here, as on earth, in their ability to advance. Indeed, some are very hard to learn, as you would say, and require a wonderful amount of guardian patience and watchfulness to unfold into a personal realization of all that the exalted beauties of their innocent realms may signify. But, oh, what joy unutterable, after long and patient waiting and watching, to see one of these young immortals, gradually unfolded to a realization of its exalted privileges as it beholds ineffable delights perpetually to open upon its inner, conscious, spirit vision. B. And as these innocents come up to us out of the earth life, we have many touching scenes presented us. As an instance, one came to me many years ago, as you would reckon duration. She was a beautiful child spirit. She remembered how sick she had been, how she had suddenly been relieved of all pain, and she had witnessed the beautiful floral tokens, by hands of loved ones of earth, placed upon her little coffin, and her guides had taken the spirit of those flowers and woven and given to her a spiritual wreath in counterpart of the one on her coffin and thus enticed her away, and she came to me, as though in delight to her own mother, with that beautiful spirit wreath. What joy to me, and the many hundreds of my school, to welcome that sweet innocence forever free from the contaminating corruptions of an earth life into one of eternal glory. And now, though long since grown, she finds her joy still lingering here, and yet retains the beautiful wreath in our school. I can hold this frail form no longer, must go now, good night. Mutual interests of labor and capital 710. Wesley contributes a short manuscript in the following words, as education that is real education, not the mere ability to read and write, broadens the views and develops the intelligence of men. It will be rightly seen that the interests of labor and capital are identical. Any cause which affects the prosperity of the man who has money to buy labor, affects him who has labor to sell. What benefits one benefits the other also. When the manufacturer is busy, his employees share in his prosperity, and if, for any reason, he is forced to close his doors, his employees must share the adversity. One cannot be injuriously affected without the other suffering with him. But it seems almost impossible to make the world see that the man who works and the man who pays for the work have anything in common. Forages, this has been explained fully. Some are prepared to accept this truth, theoretically, but their admissions do not go far enough to take practical form. A. The trouble lies in the fact that the application of the theory to every life is rendered well nigh impossible by self-interest. The interest of the employer comes in contact with the self-interest of the employee, which lies in a different direction. The attempts of conflicting interests to receive the desired objects very frequently culminate in a resort to compulsion by one side or the other, and the outcome is determined by circumstances and conditions prevailing at the time, and over which the parties to the dispute, sometimes, have no control. B. An indication of what is to come may be seen in the fact that there are labor organizations composed of men of intelligence who manage to settle, amicably, all differences with their employers, without recourse to the strike. This argues well for the future, and we hope the time will come when the laborer and capitalist shall understand each other well enough to cease ruinous efforts at mutual injury. C. Ages were required to develop men so they could discuss, rather than fight, over matters concerning which they differ, and adjust them in the forum instead of on the battlefield. D. Evolution is forward, not backward, and the time will come, in the history of men, when all will be as brothers. E. As long as there are capitalists and laborers, so long will there be arguments and differences, for each will seek to overvalue his own and underestimate his neighbor's possession, yet there need be no trouble over these differences of opinion. F. Force will not settle any questions of moral or social importance, such questions are not permanently settled until right has prevailed. G. A man who is developed spiritually will no more wrong his neighbor than he would himself. Signed, Wesley Seance No. 44, November 23, 1902, 711. Present as visitors, Judge W. T. Smith, of Sparta, the Honorable R. T. Van Horn, of Kansas City, Mo., Mrs. K. I. Dye, of Chicago, and 11 of the regular circle. After the regular opening exercises, a spirit stepped out of the cabinet, being very well made up in form, but was not recognized. After standing a moment in front of the cabinet, this gentleman presented the wonderful phenomenon of beginning to dematerialize at the feet, the body sinking down toward the floor as the dematerialization proceeded, until all of the form had dissolved away except leaving the upper part of the head appearing like unto a large terrapin resting on the carpet, and that instantly vanished, and the entire personage had resumed the conditions of invisibility. This mode of dematerialization gives the spirit form the appearance of passing down through the floor on an elevator platform, into the room below, but it is positively known to every person in the circle that the floor of the seance room and the ceiling of the room below have no opening whatever, or any kind of trapdoor arrangement, by which it would be possible for a human being in a physical body to pass through the floor into the room below at the points where this form of dematerialization occurs. And the reader should bear in mind that this mode of dematerializing the form of a spirit is just what is meant, all through the records of these seances, by the phrase that the form, or the spirit, dematerialized downwardly, or that the form or the spirit went down. And this phenomenon was repeated as many as 5 times this evening, not at the same point on the carpet, but at different points about, over the carpet of the floor of the seance room. But the reader may say, this is all recorded in Rending the Veil, why trouble the reader of this book with such record? But readers are not all alike, some have to be shown and told repeatedly. It requires a vast amount of cumulative evidence to satisfy some minds, and of this fact, the spirits doing this work are aware, and therefore they change this seance into a form test seance, in part, perhaps, for benefit of Judge Smith as well, and request that the record set out in detail a description of the most prominent phenomena occurring. 712. Immediately after the phenomenon described in paragraph 711, there came to the condition of visibility a spirit who stood a moment immediately in front of the parting of the cabinet curtains, and vanished. 713. Then a form, as of a man appeared, saying, I am glad to see you this evening. I have not so much to say this time as on former occasions, this much, however, I do say, you have a glorious work here. And the form returned into the cabinet and immediately 2 spirit ladies appeared at the same moment, one at door of cabinet and the other at southeast corner of cabinet. These stood a moment and retired behind the cabinet curtains. Preparing for Ada, 715, 714. Then the voice of Sam is heard from within the cabinet, by the circle, saying to Dr. Reed, Vel, doctor, if you dink to dry dot before de forces get weak, youst go ahead, I help what I can. Then presently Sam says, Vel, lady, ve don't ye go on out? No dings hurt mitu, go right on out. I help you. At this point a spirit man appeared at the writing desk in arena, and took a tablet from the desk, placed it on the desk, retired, and in a few moments a lady appeared in the arena at the writing desk, took up the tablet, looked it over and asked for a pencil, and Denton came to the writing desk and found one for the lady. She then began writing at a slow rate, perhaps not to exceed 100 words a minute, and when 2 sheets were written she tore them from the tablet and gave to Red Feather's medium and she passed the papers to Judge Smith. While the lady writer went into the cabinet a moment to renew the failing form, or as we say, generally, to renew or get strength, then came again and wrote 2 pages more and sent to Judge Smith, and she returned into the cabinet to get strength and appeared a 3rd time, seeming to be particular, and Sam, in the cabinet, crying out to her don't take so much pains, hurry up, don't do it or let the secretary correct it, and so on. Most of the time of the writing of the last 4 pages, a man's voice, and German at that, loud and strong, inside the cabinet, and a lady spirit outside the cabinet at the same time, writing, at the writing desk. Let the reader ponder over the conclusive test this must have been to the eye and ear witnesses. But finally, the lady got her writing finished and all delivered to the judge for him to retain the possession to close of seance, and she retired into the cabinet. And at the close of the seance, the writing was found to consist of 7 pages and 2 lines, of well-executed manuscript, of the following words, after the title. The Secret of Life, a handwriting by the Spirit Aider 715. A, if I only knew the secret of life, is the inner heart cry of hundreds.